Hello, and welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to be doing something a little bit different. Pumpkinberry and I will be sitting down to discuss what was originally intended to be our top 10 scariest games. But we took it in a little bit of a different direction, and ended up having a great conversation about several titles, and why they made us uncomfortable. Now, with this episode, we don't have to worry so much about spoilers. We try very hard to make sure that we do not give away key plot points. However, make sure to listen closely, as there are a couple of moments where we do warn you about specific spoiler moments in the episode. So, if you don't want to hear those, just make sure to skip ahead a little bit when those come up. Thank you so much for listening, and without further ado, let's descend.
Button. Did you hit the button?
I did. I hit the button.
Perfect. Okay. Oh, wait. Did I tell you about the orangutan?
I saw what you posted on Twitter. That was it.
Yeah. So I've been getting, like, at first I thought it was accidental. So I've been getting monthly emails about this orangutan that I supposedly adopted for 6 months. I've been getting, like, updates, email updates. Once a month I get, like, a photo batch with the orangutan named Peanut. And some semi-regularly, in the beginning, I was getting updates on a little bit more about how Peanut was doing. And the first one I just kind of wrote off as like, that's weird and random, and it must have been sent by accident. But then when I got the second one, I went, okay, is this like spam or phishing or something weird? And then I eventually replied back after like the third or the fourth one, saying, you know, I think this is sent to me by mistake. And then they showed me like the adoption paper or whatever as Pumpkinberry. And I was like, oh, somebody adopted this orangutan in my name. After I mentioned that they frightened me on stream, and I had a good laugh about it. I thought, okay, that's some epic troll level. It was great. And just today I got the email saying that Peanut is fully rehabilitated and being released into the wild, which was super exciting. And yeah. They mentioned that, you know, photos would be, you know, stopping and, you know, thank you so much. And, you know, would you please consider maybe helping us with another one and that kind of thing. So I just thought that was kind of cool. And I guess we could sort of mention it because it's scary things that creep us out. But I don't really know why orangutans creep me out so much. But I think it's just because their face look like human faces. And so I anthropomorphize everything. And so I immediately assume that it's like feeling and thinking things, which they are. They yeah. absolutely can feel things and think things. But I just mean I probably take it to the extreme. Like, I worry that they will one day kill us all because we've been terrible to them and the planet, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, I just worry that they're going to rise up and murder us all.
Well,
anyway,
I mean, if it makes you feel any better, I would think that, you know, because of how intelligent they are, they would only go after the people who have wronged them.
Yeah, that's true. That does actually make me feel a little bit better. You know that scene? Did you ever see Planet of the Apes, like one of the recent ones?
No.
I can't remember which one it was, but there's a scene where like one of the apes comes up and there are two guards or something, and they're like, oh, look at the monkey. And then he just like does regular monkey stuff, and then he picks up like an AK and shoots them.
Wow.
I find that so disturbing. Yeah, because I'm like, this is my worst nightmare, that they're just pretending to not understand us, but they understand us incredibly well. No way. Anyway, that has nothing to do with video games. Let's talk about the 10 scariest video games we've played during our time alive. I'm sure between the two of us, we can come up with 10.
Yeah, I found it really difficult to actually come up with a proper list, because I sort of took it a different direction, and I thought about games that made me the most uncomfortable.
Ooh.
Just because scary games in general, I would say that it's hard to, it's not that I don't get scared, but a lot of it is just like really tense, like, okay, when is the next thing gonna jump out at me? You know, very rarely is it a truly horrific experience in more ways than one, in the classic sense. But I did have a couple of games that really just made me feel gross, or like
very much uneasy. Yes, uneasy is the perfect word for it, just because of like the subject matter of the story itself. So I've got a couple.
So I actually did the same thing by default, I guess. I went in the way of, I could only come up with, you know, six games or so that really made me feel. I also went with uncomfortable or disturbed rather than jump scare, traditional jump scare. So, you know, sorry guys, if you're looking for like Outlast jump scare games, I don't think that Outlast didn't make my list. I don't know if it made your list.
I considered it, but ultimately, no. I love Outlast. Don't get me wrong.
After a certain part. Yeah. It's just like, I feel like Outlast is really great for, you know, the type of game that it is, but I find jump scares scary, but it's not like I sit down and I think back to Outlast.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't ever sit there and go, God, that was so creepy. Like that part in Outlast really bothered me. Or what does this mean? Like I did with Soma or, right. Narcosis is a good example for me. I would frequently think back on that game and be like, wow, I'm just surprised at all the depth that they crammed into like a 6-hour playthrough. And also just some of the things really bothered me about it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, anyway, so, did you want to, what was one of your games? I guess we'll just go through, I guess we don't have a like 10, number 10 or anything fancy, but
just put in like a big fancy, like sweep sound effect.
Yeah, exactly. Number 10 on Deep Dive. Beautiful. Scariest video games. What? Okay.
So the first game that I put on my list is called Welcome to the Game. And I guess I could include the sequel in that as well, because it did have a...
What? I've never heard of
sequel.
This game.
Well, okay. There's a reason why I haven't recommended this game to you, because the subject matter is pretty horrific.
Okay.
Basically, Welcome to the Game is it's like a puzzle/horror game that takes place with you, the character, exploring a version of the deep web, you know, for those who aren't aware, is basically this portion of the internet that you can't access, without specialized software and, you know,
tours,
connection protocols and things like that. Yeah. So your goal is to explore the deep web with the sole purpose of trying to find a red room, which is an online service that allows you to see and participate in interactive torture and murder.
Wow.
Yeah. So that right there alone is pretty, pretty unsettling subject matter.
I am intrigued.
The thing about this game that really makes me uncomfortable is... And you'll probably hear me bring this up a lot, even with the couple of games that you've already mentioned being Soma and Narcosis, is they're very much centered in a plausible reality.
Yep.
If a game can sit there and present this scenario that I can look at and say, you know, this can totally happen. This is not really far-fetched at all. It's either, you know, a natural progression in technology that might happen, or just something that could happen literally today. That just sort of throws you in this truly just deplorable scenario that could happen, like right now. That's when it's the most unsettling, because that's when I can relate to it the most. You know what I mean? In gameplay wise, you know, it's just very tense. There's not really any music or anything. You're just like staring at a computer screen and trying to solve all these puzzles to get to where you need to go. And in the meantime, there are, you know, supposedly people who run this service, you know, like stalking you, and you have to occasionally like get up from your computer and like walk through your dark house and like peek out your windows and lock your doors and turn off the lights and things like that so they can't find you. And it's just a super terrifying game to play in general. And I would totally recommend it, as long as you can get past the subject matter itself, because it is executed very well. But that made the top of my list for sure.
Yeah, I might have to give that a try, especially if that's on the top of your list.
Mm-hmm.
Can I tell you something?
Mm-hmm.
And we may have to cut it out of the podcast, but I just have to tell you this. Yeah, I know. I'm sorry. It's probably fine to leave it in. I just anyway. So a couple of months ago, I'd say like 6 or 7 months ago, I'm a naturally very curious person.
Mm-hmm.
And when a puzzle has presented itself to me, I like to try to solve the puzzle. It's not like I want to go looking for red rooms or anything like that. I just, something came up where I remember hearing about the deep web. I think it was, I was watching Mr. Robot. I think that's what it was. And I was like, I wonder how difficult it would be to really access this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And so, you know, one thing led to another. And I'm like slowly trying to figure out how to do all of that and tour and stuff. And then I did find some things. But what intrigues me the most about the way the deep web supposedly is set up, we'll just say it like this: the way the deep web is set up is that you've got like a level two surface level type thing where you can find gross things for hire, basically things like that. But then there are deeper levels than that, and in some of the deepest levels are studies on artificial intelligence and things that really interest me.
Yeah.
And so I was like, I want to go looking for this kind of, like, I'm just curious to see, like, if it actually exists type thing. And I ended up finding some stuff that scared me so badly just because I you know, I was probably listening to scary music and just like, I'm doing all of this. And then it was like, oh God, I found this thing. And then it was like a moment of, all of a sudden, I remembered all the horrific stories that you're told about when you go in and you have no idea what you're doing. So, you know, you just fucking downloaded Tor 3 hours ago. There's no way you're as secure as you should be.
Yeah.
You know, and I just was like, oh, God, they know that I'm in here. And it literally told me, do not come in here. And I was like, oh, God. And then I got rid of my hard drive. Like I was Jesus. So terrified. I was so terrified that I just like, I did a clean wipe of like everything. And then I was like, I was on high alert for, I'd say, 2 or 3 months after that,
yeah.
where I wouldn't even mention it. I wouldn't even say anything like, oh yeah, I've not heard of anything. And then in my initial panic, I reached out to my friend, who some of you who are listening to the podcast may know as Merkles, but I reached out to her and I was like, I just did a really stupid thing. You know, we should maybe talk about it sometime. And she's like, what's happening? And I'm like, no, like, I have to tell you in person. I can't tell you over the phone. I cannot tell you. And actually, now that I think about it, I think I said the same thing to you. Maybe I was like, I just did a really stupid thing. And, you know, basically, like, if I go missing or if I die, like, don't wonder why. It's my fault. I did it. Anyway, that's my horrific deep web story. But I'm already intrigued by this game now because, A, it's one of your top favorites, and B, because it features dark web as a subject matter.
Yeah, it's a little rough. I would say that it's worth the play for sure.
Awesome. Okay, so my one that first came to mind is a free-to-play game called I'm Scared. Have you heard of that or played that before?
I have not.
Okay. So I don't even know how to explain this experience except that it shouldn't scare you. It shouldn't scare me, I kept saying to myself, because it's like a pixelated game. But it's pretty terrifying because it broke that realism barrier for me. Even though it was a pixelated game, there are a couple of things that happen in the game, and I don't want to spoil the experience for anybody who's listening to this to find cool new horror games to play. It crosses the line a couple of times to be like, oh, this isn't just a game, which I quite enjoy. That's what I also find probably the most horrifying, is when it can touch you in real life. And then I have a couple of other ones. Like, I have Silent Hill 2 on there, which I know you couldn't get into, which I find super interesting. And we should maybe talk about that for a second.
Now, to be fair, I understand that it's not a short game. And, you know, I probably didn't give it the proper attention that it deserves. But
played it for like 2 hours, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I'd say
that's
probably somewhere
enough.
Around there.
Yeah,
I don't know. I found it really boring.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's
weird. I certainly would never sit here and like apologize for the opinion that I have about a game. However, I will say that I do tend to have a problem with titles sometimes that don't spoon feed it to me, especially in the beginning. And
okay.
Silent Hill doesn't do that at all. You know, it's very much like a, you know, read the room, read your environment sort of thing. You get like little snippets of things that are going on, but it's just like, I need that hook right away, and it just didn't do it for me.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm actually the opposite. I prefer it when they don't spoon feed it to me, when I can be like, hey, what's that like sign over there. And then I realize later that it relates to it. I love that kind of like connect the dots moment, which Silent Hill has, and then it takes it away a little bit, I feel like. So the end of Silent Hill is great, but I personally preferred maybe the all the way up until the last point, because I do feel like they spoon feed it to you at the end. It's a game about madness and personal guilt and things like that, which I also really enjoy. Like, I don't know if you've seen, have you seen the Ritual, the movie?
No.
Holy shit, man. I really enjoyed it. It approaches some traditional horror tropes and rides some, but then doesn't ride others, which is super cool. The whole movie is just like a metaphor for guilt, and I immediately connected to it and was like, oh my God, I understand this. I understand all of this. Like, I feel this. I understand. I can relate. I shouldn't say I just understand, but I relate to this and whatnot. So I really appreciate stuff like that. And that sits with me sometimes in a more unsettling way than, say, you know, a jump scare. Even though I fell out of my chair, I was so startled in Outlast 2. I would not even put that on a list of favorite games. I didn't even finish playing it because it just got so, it wasn't scary. It wasn't scary at all. It was just, you know, things would jump out and startle. Being startled is totally different from being scared and or terrified. Mm-hmm. And when I think of like games that really terrify me or a good scary game, there are some common themes for me that have to be present for it to work. And Outlast did a really good job. At least Outlast 1 did a good job of doing this in the beginning, where you're kind of like, with those naked men, that scared the shit out of me. I was like, why are they naked? Why are they chasing me? You know, like, but then it gets to be too much, you know? And I feel like just seeing something in the distance with, you know, maybe a shadowy figure and your mind can fill in the rest is far more terrifying to me than you actually showing me the monster.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the first time I see the monster, I will freak out. But then if I see it more often, I'm like, okay, this isn't as scary to me as the lurking in the dark, the unknown.
Yeah. Yeah, I get that. You know, with Outlast, it was a sort of a decent mix of that, I guess, or at least I felt the pacing was nice. And I don't ever want to come on this podcast and say that a game is bad and then or bad to me. And then not, or something that I didn't enjoy, I guess is how I should word that and not justify it. Like, I loved the first Outlast and the DLC.
Yeah, the first Outlast was good.
I thought the stories were strong. You know, the gameplay wasn't too tedious. You know, I do take a little bit of an issue with, like, the backtracking as a mechanic sort of thing that bothers me a little bit. But the second one just lost everything that made the first one good. And I was so excited for the second one, you know,
I was too,
this whole like backwoods, you know, redneck occult sort of thing. And they took every single thing that would have made that game scary and they threw it at you immediately. And they gave you no time to like absorb anything that was going on. You know, it was literally just, here's all this scary shit in the first like 20 minutes and it's going to chase you for the next 8 hours. And you just, it was almost impossible to get through the game.
Yeah. So you did get through the game, though, right?
I did finish it. Yeah.
Okay, you did finish it. Okay. Because I also don't want to come on the show and then just say, I didn't enjoy this game if I haven't finished it, or at least one of us hasn't finished it. So, But I think let's talk about that for a second. What about Outlast 2 didn't work? What about it didn't make it scary for you? Because I know a lot of people enjoyed it and found it horrifying. So I'm just wondering if what is it about the game for you and me, players like you and me, that don't find it scary?
It was a lack of pacing to me. It was the execution, you know.
Yeah.
There were plenty of moments in that game, you know, or I shouldn't even say plenty. There weren't even that many where it did kind of let you sit down and just sort of like watch what's happening and, you know, sort of it in.
So because it was nonstop, like boom here, boom here. It was like set up almost like an action game rather than like an Amnesia slow burn horror where you're wandering around like what the hell is going on. Yeah, okay.
Now they did, I'm not quite sure, it was fairly recently, the developers did introduce a new difficulty option in the game that has supposedly taken care of that and added a lot more balance to it, so you are able to specifically take in the story. And I'm curious to go back and play it that way, then maybe I'll enjoy it a little bit more because the setting does terrify me. Like, I'm super into that familial, you know, occults, like, yes. Southern.
Yeah, me too.
Churchy sort of, like, I know it's super cliche, I guess, but I'm into it, like, in a horror setting. Like, that's my jam, for sure.
Yeah, I like that.
Soma
as well.
Did that too, actually. They added the safe mode difficulty, and I actually played through a large portion of the game while I was editing the Soma episodes that that you and Chris had done. And I was playing it on the safe mode difficulty, and man, I enjoyed that so much more.
Yeah, I haven't played it yet, but I think I'm going to go through, and for Halloween, I want to play through with that mod or the safe mode that you said, because
it's a totally new experience.
Yeah, and I'm really looking forward to that. So that's interesting, because I know that a lot of people probably look at games in a specific, you know, we have to complete or we have to win, and they're not necessarily sitting down thinking like, horrify me, like just bother me. Don't have a, you know, an end game. And I feel like for me personally, where Outlast 2 maybe got it wrong for me as a person, as a horror person, listen to me, like, disclaimer myself, like, I love the devs who did Soma and I love what they try to do, but I feel like it's important to talk about this stuff. Otherwise, maybe they, you know, you won't know why you didn't find it horrifying if we don't dissect it a little bit. So anyway, I think where it went wrong for me was very much the action and this person is now chasing you and you have to run. And it was constantly. And like you said, I never got a moment to sit down and be horrified by what was happening. Like, I think I would have preferred if in the opening it was just hints here and there of what was happening in this occult, you know, situation where it slowly built up. I just think of the ways they could have revealed the information in a slower, more horrifying way probably would have been okay. But I spent the first 5 minutes really terrified. And then once a bunch of stuff happened, I was like, now I'm just running. Now I'm just adrenaline and I'm running from things and I'm not really that scared. I'm just annoyed. But I know a lot of people who loved it for that exact reason, that it was, in their mind, their favorite parts of the original Outlast, basically nonstop for an entire game. But for me, I was the opposite. So I prefer something like an experience like Amnesia, The Dark Descent. I'm going to use that. That's one of the games on my list, just because it does a lot with audio. And visually, they give you hints of the creature or anything that might be, you know, coming after you. But you don't really you don't really see it, you know, until the end. There's some pretty like obvious things, but I feel like audio is really important for me. There has to be super good audio for me to be truly disturbed or bothered. It's just I notice when a game goes out of its way to play with the audio to bother me. Like, you know, when games have it switching from left ear to right ear, like stereo sound and whispering, any kind of like, no, or even your main character, if your main character is out of breath and, you know, that adds to the feeling of helplessness for me. You know, so I probably the most common thing that I get annoyed about is when my character can't run for more than a couple of seconds before out of breath. And I'm like, oh, okay, like you're doing this because it's a scary horror game. But, you know, you could do this in a different way so that I didn't immediately recognize this as a mechanic, you know, that you don't want me to be able to run. You know, just make it so I can't run at all. You know, that's fine. But don't give it to me and then just be like, oh, I'm out of breath after 2 seconds of running. Or alternatively, like, let me run as much as I want. And then as the game, like, have something happen to me or run into me and then give me the ability where I can only go for short bursts at a time. You know,
yeah, just, that would make sense.
Yeah, make it make sense so that and then that's even more terrifying because, you know, you used to be able to run. You got comfortable running from things at a certain pace.
Yes. So,
yeah.
Fun semi-related fact that's not a scary, horror, uncomfortable game at all, but you just might find it interesting. The new Marvel's Spider-Man game that just came out for the character of Spider-Man, they recorded his dialogue twice. One of them is just normal, like everyday, you know, tone of speaking. And then they have an entire different set of audio depending on what you're doing in the game. So like if you're having a conversation with an NPC over like a radio and you're swinging your web through the air, he has a much more like labored sort of, you know, like exertion in these voice lines, which is I thought it was really cool. I thought you might find that interesting.
Yeah, that is super incredible. And that, to me, I know it's like an extra, that's a lot to hire a voice actor to do the whole set of lines again as if you're out of breath. But I feel like for a game like Spider-Man, like that's where he is, such a big mechanic of the game is swinging around. I think that that's super cool. And
I thought you might find that neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's very, very cool. All right, what else is on your list?
BioShock.
Ooh, I did play through BioShock, but I'm not so sure I found it scary.
Well, my dear, the thing that's made me so uncomfortable and scared me, I guess, about BioShock is the illusion of choice and control.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Ooh, okay. Okay.
I don't know how we're going to handle spoilers in this episode, but I'm going to have to spoil this game. If you haven't played BioShock, just like hit pause, go play it, come back in 12 hours and keep listening.
Or skip ahead.
That works too. Yeah, that's probably a more sensible option. But if you haven't played BioShock, you totally should, because it's incredible. So BioShock is, you know, it's all about you, the character, following instructions that people give you, basically, or that this one person is giving you this entire time. Or what's two or three people that you end up like listening to, I guess, throughout the game. Would you kindly? Yeah, that's like, that's your character's sort of like trigger phrase, I guess, that causes you to do things. Is, you know, would you kindly go collect this item, or would you kindly go unlock this door, or whatever the case may be. And you know, the entire time you even though somebody's telling you to do these things, you feel like you're still making the choice to do it. But of course, at the end of the game, and I won't get too specific, you know, you basically discover that you were under some sort of hypnotic control.
Yeah.
And you've never had a choice the entire time. And something like that to me is very unnerving, because I'm somebody who takes a lot of comfort in being in control of what's happening around me as much as possible. That's, you know, for example, like, that's one of the reasons I don't like flying, right? Is because, you know, you sort of have to sit in this giant metal tube and just relinquish control for, however long your flight is. And like, if something happens, like, you can't do anything about it. You know what I mean? And so that's really where BioShock hit me and made me the most uncomfortable.
I wonder if, so do you also avoid transportation where you're not like driving?
No.
Like, does that also make you uncomfortable, or is it just the plane?
It doesn't make me, like, as far as flight goes, I find the thought sort of debilitating and I hate it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like riding on a bus or something like that, or like riding in a car with somebody else, no, that doesn't really bother me as much, because I know that if something happens, there's a door that I can, you know, like, obviously I'm not going to jump out of like a moving vehicle, just depending on the situation. Like, I can leave, you know?
Yeah.
You can't exactly just like jump out of a plane.
Yeah. Okay. So I was wondering if maybe what made the plane so scary is that the results, no matter which way you look at it, if something goes wrong, usually is death, and there's nothing you can do about it. Whereas in a car, I mean, you can die in a car when somebody else is driving, but, you know, there's also accidents. There's like levels of, you know, ways you can get out of the car usually. So that's interesting. It's also sort of why I've personally avoided big ship, like cruises, where you go out onto the deep ocean.
Mm-hmm.
I've sort of avoided that, because I find that a little bit terrifying for the same reason. Like, if anything happens, like, there's nothing you can do. You're just in the ocean.
Right.
And I mean, I can tread water, but I can't tread water, you know, forever. So it's just, I find that pretty terrifying. I think the loss of control is a really good element when games use that. Silent Hill 2 does that a little bit, and I know that we talked about it a little already, but they do it in that your weapons will break, or they're not always as strong as you would like them to be. So fighting enemies is hard, and the mechanics are clunky. So it leaves you with the best option usually is to run from whatever it is that's chasing you rather than beating it, which at first can be frustrating for people who play games and expect to just, like, you know, pick up your gun and win and be a hero. But for a horror game, I think that's actually really interesting, because you're forcing somebody to feel like they're not in control, or they're not strong enough, or helplessness slowly starts to, like, leak in, And I think that that's a really, when a game does that, I think that's excellent.
It definitely lends itself to the horror or like genre of fear.
Yeah.
Than just straight up combat does.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the time when there's any combat, it takes me out a little bit, which sometimes is needed. Sometimes I need that tension release. But usually if I have to worry about, you know, hitting a button and, you know, attacking somebody, I remember it's a game, you know, rather than a scary experience. Not that that's bad, but
yeah.
Did you ever play Dead Space?
I didn't finish it. Okay. And that was purely just due to being very frustrated by the game. It does not run well on modern PCs.
Oh no. Okay.
But it's also too new for me to go the route of like emulation or something that I would use for a really old game. So I remember the first, I want to say, hour and a half to 2 hours of that game, I was just stuck on a game breaking bug where the game had an invisible wall in front of a door that I had to walk through. And yeah, it was super annoying and just getting really, really frustrated. But overall, I felt that game did have a nice mix of feeling helpless and feeling like all you can do is run and combat. I actually really appreciated that about Dead Space. And I have another game on my list that sort of falls in that same sort of space.
Yeah, I didn't play Dead Space on the computer. I played it when it first came out on the PlayStation. And my God, it did a really good job of making me feel uncomfortable and unsettled with just like the story and the things that were happening and the sounds. And then also somehow it gave me a feeling of hope, like I could make it because I would still get my weapon and upgrade my weapon and slowly progress. But I also still felt pretty scared most of the time. And there would be moments in that game where I would feel good and strong, and then immediately they would shut it down with a story element. And I thought that was really good. So I don't know if I ever played the second one. I own it, but I don't think I ever got around to playing it. But for those of you listening, looking for cool, scary games to play, I would highly recommend the original Dead Space, though apparently not on the computer.
Yeah, it's a little rough on PC, unfortunately.
Yeah. So what was the game that you had that connected to that one?
Resident Evil 7.
Ooh, okay. I'm going to have to Google real quick. I can't remember which one was 7.
7 was the one, and for,
is it,
you know,
the most
I'm pretty sure
one?
Everybody, yeah, that I'm pretty sure everybody's aware, but for those that aren't, you know, aware of your Twitch streams as much as they are the podcast, that was the game that I had you play.
Oh, that's right.
On your first front page stint.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm-hmm. The one that was one of the many times I was pretty sure I was about to get like fired.
Yeah. That was a great game.
Yeah. I'll let you, because I know you had a lot of moments where you were just like super uncomfortable with that game. For me, Resident Evil 7 was honestly just the perfect mix of tension and, you know, this feeling like you're always being watched or like being stalked or, you know, things like that. The puzzles were mostly easy to grasp, but not too easy. And I felt the pacing was great in terms of how much combat the game actually gave you.
Yeah.
And also how easy it was. You know, I feel like, especially with a horror game, you can have your combat, but it does not have to feel like a fight, if that makes sense.
It doesn't have to be Dark Souls to be scary.
Exactly. Yeah. Like for the purpose of not spoiling, all I will say is you fight something at the end of Resident Evil 7. However, that fight is maybe, 30 seconds to like 2 minutes at the most. Like there's no, you don't need to work for it, which I really appreciate, but you still had that element of action and of, you know, tension release. And on top of that, that is truly just like one of the most disgusting games that I've ever played.
Yeah,
you know,
that was pretty disturbing.
Yeah, and so like overall it ticked all of those boxes for me and just made me feel super uneasy the entire time.
I wrote down the cat lady as well, but I'm not sure if I actually found that game scary as much as I found it uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Just because the subject matter, it's for those of you listening, writing down games, maybe double check this one first, because again, the subject matter is pretty intense. rated R or whatever, but just be aware it's a bit heavier than probably you're expecting. But I think that's part of what made it so uncomfortable for me. But I can't tell if the reason why I loved the game is because I felt uncomfortable, scared, or just, you know, like my end experience of feeling like that was a, you know, 8-hour therapy game, you know, it like walked me through that experience. So I have so much love for the Cat Lady, but I don't know if it's because of that or if it's because I actually thought it was a scary game. So I don't know.
Do you think that, you know, because I know how you go into games, you know, I know you don't do a lot of reading or anything mm-hmm. like that beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that if you sort of knew that, or I should ask, did you sort of know that was coming before you started playing the game?
No, I had no idea. Somebody got me the game, and I honestly thought when it was in my library for a very long time, I thought, oh, this is going to be a cute game. You know, the Cat Lady, it's going to be great. And then when I went to click on it for a day, I saw it was a horror game, and I went, oh, okay. And you know me, I read maybe the first half of the sentence and went, oh, okay, this seems interesting, so I won't read mm-hmm. anymore. And then I didn't know anything else when I booted it up. So luckily it was right at the beginning of my streaming experience, like my streaming career, if you can call it that. And I had maybe about 30 or so people hanging out in the chat, and I felt terrible at first because immediately into the game, there's some very intense subject matter. And I went, I had to apologize and say, I had no idea that this was in here, but you know, maybe I'm intrigued, so I'm going to keep going. But you know, if you have to nope out, I completely understand. And we had a couple of people nope out, but for the most part, the mm-hmm. rest of us that stayed to watch this horror show, it was really good. It was real good.
Do you think that it would have been as effective or as, uncomfortable, I guess, if you had known what was coming?
No.
Or had known a little bit more about what the game was meant to do before you played it?
Yeah, definitely not. So, and this is just something I know about myself. For other people can watch trailers and or see things or know about the game, and it doesn't bother their experience. But for me, I feel like I... because I extrapolate so much when I'm playing a game, and I'm like wondering, oh, what about this? And what about this? If you tell me kind of the premise to try to hook me, you're ruining the first 10, 15 minutes of your game where you're also trying uh-huh. to hook me. Right. So I'd yeah. rather be hooked by your game than, you know, by the trailer or whatever advertisement that you have to do to get most people to want to play your game, which I get why they do it, but I just, absolutely. But that's something I know about myself, so I purposely will avoid it. So if I see a game that I'm interested in, like, is it Observation? Yes, Observation. Yeah. We linked the same thing. So I watched like maybe a couple of seconds of that. And the moment it says there's an artificial intelligence in the game, I hit pause and I was like, okay, I'm done. I'm into it. I don't want to know anymore. these are all of my favorite things. So, but I think it's important to kind of like recognize that if that's going to influence your experience, maybe you don't want to look at those things.
Yeah, I would agree. Sometimes it's hard though, man.
I know.
I'm a sucker for a really good trailer. So, you know, but it's definitely a gamble, you know, as far as, you know, cause you can sit there and you can watch like a 2.5 minute trailer and the first minute like has you hooked, and that's probably where you should stop. Cause guess what's going to happen in that last minute and a half of that trailer is that's when you get your quick cuts of
things like that happen later in the game. Gonna happen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's such a bummer because I remember I used to, for the movie theater, I always wanted to be there for the trailers because they mm-hmm. were one of my favorite parts of the movie going experience. But in the later years, the trailers they're not trailers. They're not like, ooh, that looks interesting. I used to say that looks interesting. I wonder what that's going to be about. You can't say that anymore when you watch a trailer. They literally right. summarize the game visually in one, or the game or the movie visually in 1 minute. And you're like, okay, I know what that's about. And I know the reason why they've done that. They've done that because our attention spans have shifted because of social media and the internet. We can binge things on Netflix, but they basically want to tell you exactly what you're going to get. They want to set your expectations so that they make the most money. So mm-hmm. they're like, okay, here you go. This is everything that you want to expect in this film. Go see it and go see it multiple times. or see it, you know, in 2D or 3D, and so we can make extra money. Yeah. You know, it used to be that, I feel like, anyway, I'm not really big in the industry, so I should maybe not assume. And by industry, I mean the movie. You know, I'm not into movies or anything like that, but I feel like it used to be that you could present a trailer to a film, people would go see that film, and if they liked it, they'd go back again. And they'd see it multiple times, maybe, you know, 5 or 6 times if they really loved your film. And so, but this time it's like movies are so expensive now that people are probably going to go one time. So they would rather set expectations so that people are like, oh yeah, okay, I want to see that. I know I want to see that because I know what to expect. So I will spend the $24 for my movie ticket. You know, I'll do that. But if they don't give you everything or enough, you just won't bother going because you don't know if it's going to be something that you enjoy. At least that's my weird theory on it anyway.
No, I mean, it's totally valid. I remember the moment where I felt like, for as far as the type of movies that I generally consume, the moment where I sort of realized that trailers were broken and they would never like be the same again was the trailer for the movie Quarantine.
Ooh,
and I don't know if you've seen that or if you remember
that
at all.
And I was disappointed actually when I saw it in the theater.
I really liked the movie. You know, it was fun. You know, it definitely could have been more, I guess. But you know, it was just a fun little scary movie. But
yeah,
I'll be damned if in that trailer, man, they showed the final moments of the movie at the end of that trailer.
Really?
So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh wow.
100%. Yeah, that scene where, you know, she's looking into the fucking spoilers, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, where she's looking into the camera and she's like crawling towards it and then she just gets pulled back and then that's when the movie ends. That's at the end of the trailer.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
But yeah, they totally ruined it. And, you know, as soon as I saw that, I was like, man, that is such a disappointment. Like,
yeah.
You watch that trailer and you immediately know how that's going to end. Stop it. Don't do this. Don't ruin this for me.
Yeah. Don't do this anymore. I like to do my own form of like hype building, which sounds really weird, but so for example, when Detroit was, this is not a scary game at all, I apologize, but when Detroit was coming out, I knew I wanted to play this game the moment they announced it, because I remember I played Beyond Two Souls and I love that's one of my favorite games of all time, just because of the story. I realized that there are some mechanical issues, but I don't care. I will look past them because the story was such a ride for me. At the end of that game, they show the Kara like demo. And I remember watching that and feeling so much when I watched that and thinking like, man, I wish they made this into a game. So when that announcement came out, hey, we're making a game. It's called Detroit and it's based on the Kara short. I lost it. And I immediately went to my Twitter and I muted everything related to it because I didn't want to get spoiled on it. But about a week or two prior to the release, I allowed myself to check and see like what they were showing on their Twitter, because normally when you go to a game dev's Twitter, they're spoiling everything. At least in my opinion, they spoil a lot more than I prefer as a player to ingest, which means I just don't go and look. But for this game, I had heard that they were showing more shorts like Kara that were just meant to be companions to the game. They're not spoilers. So it's not like they're in the game or anything. So I went and I watched those. And I'll tell you something. Had I not seen that last short, that moment in the game where I started bawling would not have hit me the way that it did had I not seen that short. So now I'm kind of like, well, shit. You know, do I or don't I? But I feel like that's different than a trailer. You know, I feel like when somebody or devs or anybody creates something and says, here, I've made something else as a companion piece for this, then yeah, I will absolutely check it out rather than, you know,
sure.
just ignoring that. So yeah, anyway, ramble. Do you have any other games?
The last game on my list is a game that came out on the PlayStation 2 called State of Emergency. Have you heard of this?
No, I've not heard of this. I'm writing it down.
Okay, well, I'm terrified to play this game on Twitch. Because it's purely because of the subject matter. So State of Emergency is...
Why do you like all these weird games, Cap?
I don't know. I can't explain it. I'll figure it out. I'll let you know. So State of Emergency is a game about a... It's like a mega corporation that sort of overthrows the government and takes control, basically.
Okay.
There is, you know, another group that wants to overthrow this you know, world of corporate control, right?
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like a pretty intriguing.
Yeah, that is,
you know,
pretty intriguing
proposition. You know, as far as the story goes, right? However, gameplay wise, the entire mechanic of the game is you running in with, you know, a variety of weapons and just like shooting up a shopping mall, basically,
oh,
and just murdering
oh
innocent people. Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay.
Yeah. And of course, you know, a game coming out that did that today would not fly ever, you know, for obvious reasons. You know, just with the world that we live in, again, you know, going back to, you know, what I said in the beginning, like, this game makes me uncomfortable, and this game, you know, in a way scares me because that's not necessarily something that is too, you know,
it could happen, yeah,
in the world that we live in today. And
I have to tell you, I don't think I comprehended that it could happen until Vegas last year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just, there was some level of detachment to the school shootings and things for me where it's not like I didn't understand what was happening, and it's not like I wasn't empathetic. I absolutely was, but I also didn't feel scared in my home country of the United States until last year in Vegas. And after that happened, for those of you listening who don't know, I was in Vegas last year during the shooting, and I remember coming home from that and saying, I'm never going back to the U.S. again. Like, I've never felt scared like this in my own, you know, in my home country before. And then it everything just sort of like made sense in that way. So I feel like, I guess it's good that a game like State of Emergency makes you uncomfortable, but I wish that it made more people uncomfortable, because I feel like we could probably do a lot if I think we didn't have that disconnect between what that experience is actually like, you know. It's wild.
Yeah, I can definitely understand that. You know, it's a lot of things, right? It's hard to sort of sit down and you know, brace yourself and say, yeah, you should continue to live your life that you want to live and laugh and love and, you know, however you want to phrase that, but these terrible things can actually happen. You know, I personally tend to root myself a little bit more in reality and do my best to not put myself in situations where things like that are, you know, possible, as much as one can do.
Yeah, but I mean, you think about that, and I mean, that's my job. So
right.
how do you not put yourself in a situation where that can happen? So I used to think the same thing. I used to think, well, you know, crazy things can happen anywhere you go and no matter where you are. And for me, you know, going and, you know, I was there to photograph a wedding, and then it's just the fact that it can happen anywhere, but not really. It can't really happen like it does with the frequency that it does in the U.S. here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So I can feel somewhat safe knowing that if I'm going to go, you know, to a big concert, you know, I'm not maybe going to get gunned down. But I worry about that sometimes. And a lot of people joke and say, okay, you're being a bit ridiculous, not wanting to go to TwitchCon or, you know, whatever it is, because you're worried that something might happen there. And, you know, it's not like I would let something stop me completely from living my life, but it's something that I throw into the, do I have the energy to travel right now? Cause I'm working really hard on a whole bunch of different projects. Not really. Plus I also just this and plus this and plus, oh yeah, you know, I am a little bit uncomfortable, you know, with this state of things a bit. So it's,
and I mean,
it's
even
tough.
With something like TwitchCon, you know, I suppose I could understand somebody saying a convention revolved around gaming and gamers and, you know, things sort of that fall under that umbrella would never really be something that could happen at, you know. But then you look at, what was it, Jacksonville?
Yeah,
with
Florida,
where it was a Madden tournament, I believe.
Yeah. Did you
it
watch
happened
that?
Right there. I did, yeah.
Yeah, I did too. I regret it. I literally, everything I was reading was like, don't watch it or listen or whatever. And I'm curious by my very nature, and I watched it anyway. Yeah, it was a bit rough. But I feel like
pretty uncomfortable.
Yeah, I'm torn between, you don't need to watch those things to understand. You definitely don't. and also just like, oh,
you do though.
You yeah. And some part of me is like, you do. But here's the thing. I feel like I don't even know how to, this is really deep all of a sudden. I don't know if we should keep this in here, but yeah, it's tough. I'll say this. It's tough because you want to keep living your life. And the way that media is set up right now is constantly saying all the bad things that are going on in the world, which just leaves everybody feeling really fucking hopeless. So there's a fine balance between living your life, being empathetic, and like trying to make a difference and doing your part either in voting or, you know, whatever you can really, and also just living your damn life, because the whole world can't stop.
Right.
Or it doesn't stop, rather. So it's just, yeah. I don't know. I don't have anything nice or uplifting to say about that.
It's hard, right? You know, yeah. There isn't really something that you can say to tie a conversation like this with like a nice pretty bow and, you know, say, but here's this, you know, it doesn't exist. And that doesn't mean that, you know, you should let it debilitate you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I don't feel like it's unreasonable to say, well, what can I do to be more prepared for something like this? Which is why I watched that video.
Oh my God.
That clip that was released, you know, like, I feel like I don't even want to say that it sounds crazy to say, because it almost doesn't, but I guess I just don't know where the balance is, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, where I'm at right now.
What is the balance between living my life as I normally would and feeling like I need to actually know what a gunshot in the distance sounds like?
Fireworks. Did I tell you? Did I tell you when I was in, I think I told you this, but after, so this happened October 1st last year, the Vegas shooting. And then in January, I went to Panama for another wedding. And right outside of our hotel, they set off fireworks one of the nights that we were there in celebration.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, I was laying in bed when it happened, and it was right outside our window. It was so loud. The moment it happened, I rolled out of my bed onto the floor, covered my head with my hands, and shouted at the top of my lungs, "Are you fucking kidding me?" As in, like, is this happening again? And then it was like a moment or two ringing in my ears a little bit, and then calmed down. And I was like, it's fucking fireworks. That's all it was. That's all it was. And then I just started crying there on the floor, because I was overwhelmed at the thought that for a second, yeah. I thought it, you know, it just immediately brought me right back to that. And I think like therapy would be a good idea. And also, and also just like, I think nothing can really kind of prepare you for that. Even if you know what it sounds like, I just don't think,
yeah,
I don't think you need to watch it to kind of like know, you know, what's happening. But I think the fact that they didn't know what was happening, you know, they heard it and was like, what the hell was that? You know, it's kind of like maybe hearing that would make you more prepared. I really honestly don't know. There is a fine line between being prepared and just morbid curiosity and
paranoia.
And then, you know, getting so wrapped up in it that you do find your life, you know, find it debilitating to move on or move forward. And then there is the ignorance is bliss, you know, like, I don't think everybody should be taking the blue pill for the rest of their life. You know, I don't think that you should go around being blissfully ignorant all the time. But I do think that it's important to know what works for you and what doesn't work for you. Hearing about the news all the time just doesn't help you, don't do it. I get my news on occasion, like when big stuff goes down, I know about it usually because Twitter mentions it, and then I go and I search for the news that I want to ingest. I don't follow news feeds. I don't have my dad has a news channel on 24/7. It is always on his television going nonstop. And I just like, that is not healthy, in my opinion.
It's too much.
It's too much. And also just like, they're trained to be, what is that word called? What they call it, something, not shock value, but it's like, I don't know what it's called. My brain fart. But the news is presented specifically to kind of produce this reaction from you that you are too scared and you are not safe and, you know, anything could happen type thing. And they do that nonstop because it's what gets them the most money and the most views and the most political power. So don't ingest that all the time. But I'm also not saying be willfully ignorant to everything that's going on in the world, you right. know. So it's just a fine line. And I feel like the balance is different for everybody. You know, there are some people that can read the news and not let it completely destroy their world. But I look at stuff sometimes and I'm just like, wow, I feel helpless and I feel like not getting out of bed. So that's mm-hmm. not really a good way to go about it either. So,
yeah, I don't know. I'm probably about to put my foot in my mouth by saying this, but like, don't you just find it fucked up that the act of bringing us information about what's going on in the world is a profitable venture?
Yes, it's very fucked up. It should be, there should be not for profit. You should not get any profit from news and things like that.
It's so gross.
It's very gross. And it's why we're in such the trouble that we're in, to be honest with you. Man, the power is in your hands, really, to kind of like make sure that you're making the right choice. But there is everything is against you, in my opinion. Every site that you read, pretty much every person that you talk to, you have to kind of wonder, okay, well, where did they get this information? And that's tiring. I'm sorry,
it's
but
exhausting.
That's exhausting. Yes. And I like it. Not only is it exhausting mentally, but just you can't expect everybody to want to do that all the time. And I know that there are people out there that do this all the time and they're very political and they know exactly what's going on and they do all of the research, but I cannot do that all the time. I have to pick and choose my battles. So there are certain things where I will go, okay, this means a lot to me, like net neutrality, for example, like means a lot to me. So I will pour effort into that. I will mention it to people. I will say, hey, mm-hmm. here are some places where I think you should go to educate yourself, but I can't do it with everything. Otherwise I'll just be tired and sad all the time. It's why I didn't become a marine biologist. The woman who came in to talk about it was so frank with me. She basically said, oh, you know, you have to be okay with never winning. You have to be okay with all of your life's work. Basically, every year you're just watching it get worse and worse and worse and never being able to fix it. And I went, nope, I'm not okay with that. I would be sad all the time.
Yeah.
I just can't do that.
Wow.
Yeah. Okay. So we've talked for an hour now. We should probably wrap up the episode, but this was supposed to be like a cute 10 of our favorite horror games. Oopsies.
Sorry, not sorry. Welcome to Deep Dive.
Yep. Sorry, not sorry.
Did you have any more games on your list?
No, I don't think that I did.
No,
because I went for games that really bothered me or horrified me. I mean, I have some like cheesy, like if you want, you know, 5 or 6 or 10 or whatever of games that don't leave you mm-hmm. feeling uncomfortable, I have some of those, but for the most part, well, those are my favorites. Well, I think
let me ask you this, do you have any like honorable mentions
what
just
was
off the top of your head?
Yeah, the cell phone game.
I was gonna say the same one. Simulacra.
Oh, was really good. Yeah, that was a really good game. Just because, again, it did the right stuff with kind of the sound effects and the alternate reality or ARG. And then I'm going to mention that somebody asked, oh, wait, is that, I got a tweet actually that said, somebody asked if you would talk about a certain game. Let me just look and see if I can find it really quick. Sorry. Sanitarium.
Oh my God, Sanitarium is so good. Holy
All right,
shit.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I honestly, I want to say like really nothing about Sanitarium because you have to play it. I know you love it.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I can say that it is just, it's a work of art. It's such an incredible game. 100%. Just the totally immersive universe that it sort of drops you into. And even that isn't really describing it properly. Just really, really strong
point-and-click puzzle adventure game that really just sort of, you know, dives into, you know, your own mind very heavily. And it's a ride for sure.
That's amazing. Okay, I will add that to my list. So I have Welcome to the Game, State of Emergency, and this one now as well.
Man, I would love, I can't wait to, you should hurry up and play that because I would love to sit down and talk about that.
I think we might play it actually either Wednesday or I can start next week and play it on Monday.
Oh man, that would be amazing.
I am going to give an honorable mention to my own garbage that I made. So
It is not garbage.
But I'm just saying, like, I feel slightly gross, except I'm so excited and I had so much fun making this that I
was going
to
mention it if you didn't.
Oh, bless you. So... I don't know if you listeners are into tabletop, like Dungeons and Dragons or anything like that, but if you are, I'm going to tell you that you should check out my 3-episode miniseries for Halloween. It's called Stygian Gate, and you can find it at twitch.tv/tablestory. We will include links and everything down below, but I have basically created a horror show about equal trade, and I have a companion piece, which is the website with puzzles and things like that, and it's a whole lot of horrific fun, so you should come and check it out.
Let me say this, I'm not into tabletop or D&D. You know, Miss Pumpkinberry over here, she is like quickly becoming the queen of tabletop, and
no,
it's ridiculous and amazing.
What are you talking about?
But I can't get into most of it. Like, it's just that format just doesn't grab me.
Yeah,
but this show, first of all, it's very much rooted in reality.
Yep.
It feels real. And just on top of that, you know, the execution of the story, you know, it sounds weird, but like how often you roll really adds to the intensity of the whole thing. It's like watching a movie. And I've already watched it twice, actually.
Oh,
like,
wow.
I can't.
I need
more. So yeah, for anybody who's like not even into that kind of stuff, go sit down and watch like the first 20 minutes. And if you're not hooked, then thank you for checking it out. Close it and move on. But I think that even if it's not really your jam normally, you will enjoy it.
Aw, thanks, Cap.
So good.
Okay. But yeah, that's
I feel like
that's all we
I feel
wrote,
like
right?
I had.
Oh, you were gonna say something else?
I thought I had one more, but I think I've forgotten because we talked about Simulacra, which I know I wanted.
Yep, honorable mentions.
Yeah, I would say like Litters of Fear is another really good one. You know, it's you know, not so much rooted in reality or anything like that. It's just a very disturbing story in general. I wouldn't say there's a lot of depth to it.
Yeah. I can appreciate a game like that, though. And some people like just traditional like jump scary horror, right? They don't necessarily find the in-depth mind trolling to be very scary, so I can appreciate
Layers
of Fear was pretty good.
And that game specifically was, you know, I hate using this term, but that was like a specific trigger for me because when I was a child, I don't know why, but I was always terrified by like paintings portrait paintings.
Oh my god, I used to my cousin told me a scary story, which reminds me, next week for a podcast episode we should totally do scary stories. We should just come up with some and then scare each other. So anyway, my cousin told me this scary story about how there was this like landscape painting of a farm, and there was like this little black dot on the painting, and then as time would go by, or like weeks would go by, and the dot would just get bigger and bigger, and like it's but what he did was, when he told this story, he was like, that painting in grandma's, like the actual painting here, I saw this and it got bigger and bigger and bigger, and then it was like this horrific, like, you know, demon face at the edge of the painting, and then he was like, and then it was gone, and I haven't seen it since. And I'm like, oh fuck you, you know, like,
no,
clearly
not,
it's
no,
come out
okay.
of the painting now. But yeah,
I don't like that.
It's
just like, you know, you see this painting of just this person like just staring at you, you know, and it's it feels alive, and like, what are you thinking? And like,
so that's why I find orangutans so scary. Not to bring it all the way back around, but to bring it all the way back around, that's it. They're looking at you with their eyes, and it's like they see into your soul. Oh no.
But they're living things, like you can see that, and you know that they're meant to be like alive and thinking and feeling. And I guess, you know, I don't really connect with that fear there, because, you know, I can see that this is a living creature, you know, but it's just when you have this inanimate object that feels like it still has,
it's still like watching
projecting its soul onto you, which sounds like, that's like the dumbest thing I've ever said, but it's true. Like, it's just
so much.
It's just, I don't know. It terrified me. And there's this one moment, of course, where the game just literally jump scares you with a giant painting of just some dude's face.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
And you were like,
oh my God, I couldn't deal with it.
Oh God, that's good.
What else? Among the Sleep.
Ooh, yeah. Among the Sleep was pretty
probably my last honorable mention. Again, you know, it's very much like horror game / family drama. Doesn't rely too much on jump scares, so if that's not your thing, definitely still recommend it. Where you sort of play from the viewpoint of a child. It's very, very nice and short. You know, you can sit down and play it in a few hours. It's real solid. I enjoyed that one quite a bit as well. So that, I'd say that'd be my last one.
I'm going to look really quickly here and see if there's anything else that pops out to me. Oh yeah. Okay. Two. I'm going to add two to the list.
Okay.
Slenderman, the Slenderman games.
Really?
I found, yes, I did. I found them pretty creepy. And the second one is Wick. I found Wick really terrifying. It's the same format repeated like 5 times in a row with a little adjustments or the difficulty, I guess, increased. But that one was pretty good. And Alien Isolation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alien was pretty good. I feel like it was a bit too long, which I think
it was way too long.
Yeah. Chris said in our last podcast episode. But I happen to agree. I feel like it could have been a lot shorter and it would have been just as powerful. But yeah, I feel like that one definitely needs some to be mentioned because I definitely felt helpless during a lot of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was really, really good.
SCP Containment Breach kind of got me too, but that was purely because
it did me too.
Purely because it sounds, again, this sounds really weird, but like the larger, if you have a game or a movie or something like that that's set in like a really large building, that's terrifying to me.
I wonder why.
Like, I could never live in like a giant house, you know. And
yeah.
You know, I'd be down, you know, eventually, like if it was necessary and if I could make use of it, you know, maybe like 3 or 4 bedrooms, something like that would be kind of cool. But that is like my serious max. Like, if I live in a house that is so large that I can't really be aware of what's happening at the other end.
No, fuck that.
No, goodbye. I'm out.
Same.
I can't deal with it. Hotels especially. I cannot, like, hotels freak me out if they're empty.
Oh, yeah.
I can't. It's so unnerving to me. I can't do it.
My
can't handle it.
My sister used to be a night manager of a hotel. And
I
was like, yeah,
God.
No way, man. No fucking way. Cannot do that. But yeah, I can see why that would be scary. We actually just moved from a townhouse with 3 bedrooms into a, you know, 1 bedroom, much smaller apartment. I'm so happy. Like, it's not only is it just like everything that I need within the space that I need it. And yeah, it kind of sucks that we don't have guest rooms anymore, but you know, we have a couch if people are cool with like just crashing on the couch. But I do feel much, I shouldn't say safer, but I'm going to use that word. I hated going down the stairs in the dark or just like, I would actually call down or make sounds first sometimes. I can't believe I'm admitting this to you. But especially if I spent a long time on my computer, kind of immersed, either working or whatever, and then I would kind of get up and be like, oh, fuck, it was light out when I started working. And I didn't bother to, I'm a weirdo. And
you didn't
I get,
turn any lights on.
I didn't turn any lights on. So I get so immersed in what I'm doing, and I don't. I just stand up, and I'm like, oh, I'm hungry now. And, the whole place is dark, and no one's here. But my cats are here, so sometimes they make weird noises. So then it's just like, I have to go down the stairs. So I would just be like, I would make the sound.
Well,
yeah. I
guess
would,
I'll die.
Yeah, guess I'll just stay here and starve. But yeah, I would make sounds to kind of like attract my cats. And then, you know, once my cats were moving and didn't get eaten by a monster, I would turn the light on eventually, like crawl down the stairs, turn the light on and go get myself some food. But oh man, there is nothing quite like the rush of being alone in your apartment or house or whatever, and having to either dash to the bathroom or dash to the kitchen or wherever it is that you're going. God, man.
Yep.
Whew.
Hated it. I hated it. My parents built a pretty large house, you know, when I was a lot younger, and, you know, same thing, you know, and you exit, you know, like one of the bedrooms, and it's a big open, you know, floor. So like you can look out the hallway and see into the living room, and you know, the kitchen's right there, and there's no doors in between you, but it's just like, it's totally dark on the other end.
And,
and we had this, they wanted to originally, my family's full of musicians, and they originally wanted to build.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they wanted to build a home studio and, you know, rent it out to local musicians, okay. Which unfortunately didn't end up happening. But that resulted in a room that was literally the length of the house that had no lights,
totally
unfinished, just concrete, you know, walls and wood. And they actually built a bomb shelter down there too, which is just fucking weird on a whole other level. Yeah. I've never asked my mom about it. I don't even want to know whose idea that was, whatever. But yeah. And I also, and you know, it doesn't even sound that weird, I guess. You know, we talked about a lot of things that terrify us in this episode on a really deep level, but I also just, I enjoy that. I enjoy being scared as long as I'm still in control. If I'm playing a game, it's fine. So like
we gotta talk about this. Why do we enjoy being scared so much?
I don't know. Like, I used to walk into that room and shut the door behind me and just, like, stare.
Okay, that's a bit much.
Until I couldn't take it anymore.
What?
And it was such, like, a rush. And, part of me, like, wanted something to happen. And I still sort of feel that way in a sense. You know, granted, I'm not nearly as reckless with it because, you know, I do think that there are... There's a movie that used this line in the trailer. I wish I remember what it was, but it's literally just, there are things in this world that we can't comprehend.
Yeah.
And I still think that that's true.
Yeah.
And as a much younger individual, I always wanted to try to find ways to sort of test those boundaries.
Same.
And to see if I could sort of let myself in a little bit, just to see what's there,
dude.
You know?
Okay. We got to talk about this a little bit. I would love to hear... I would love to hear some of the silly things that scare you. I know we talked a lot about like actually scary things, but I would love to hear some of that. And then also 100% the same. When I was younger, I remember I would go searching for either supernatural. I needed something to be so convincing that I could believe in it. Like but I wanted it to. It was like, you know, most kids super excited about superheroes and superpowers. Me, man, show me that I can be Sam and Dean Winchester. Like, just, I know that's crazy, but I wanted that. And that show hadn't even come out yet. So, you know, it was just like, come on, I want this. I'm ready. My body's ready. And I had a group of friends, and we were really into that. So we were like ghost chasers, except not quite, because, you know, we didn't have any equipment or anything like that. But we would look at creepy stuff and be like, man, let's go investigate, like idiots, like young idiots. So I remember this specific instance where we used to meet up in the cemetery, like total. This is going to make me sound crazy. This episode's, everybody's going to be like, PB, you're crazy. But we used to meet up in a cemetery that was somewhat near my house. And I remember one night we were going by, we were heading to my house, and I looked and I was with a friend and we saw a light in the cemetery, and we went, oh, that looks like where we meet up. Do you think they're there? Like, should we go? And something came over me where it was like, ooh, not today. And so we're like, oh, okay, not to, but my friend had the same reaction. Like, no, we didn't mention that we were going to meet up today. So, you know, usually we have a rule, if we see a light or something like that, we'll go and check it out. Cause it was a small town. Like, nobody goes to the fucking cemetery at night except for dumb teenagers. So we're like, no, that's okay. And I shit you not, 2 days later, it was like somebody had, a murderer had escaped and had been sleeping in the cemetery.
Oh,
and
God.
I was like, thank God we didn't go check it out. Like,
no shit.
Yeah. And there were a couple of instances where we did stupid shit without, you know, I guess teenagers do, that you just don't think about until you've done it, or until you're an adult and you realize, wow, that could have gone a whole different way. But yeah, I used to really search for that kind of stuff because I wanted to see if it was real or not. But yeah, then I kind of sort of grew out of that, sort of, in that I don't hunt for it anymore. But man, if somebody came up to me and was like, "I'm Dean Winchester," I'd be like, "Let me get my shotgun. I don't have one, but like I'm ready. Like I know I'm ready to go." But what are some other crazy things that used to scare you as a kid or still do scare you?
It's hard because I guess I always sort of chose to take part in it.
Yeah.
When I was younger, so it's hard to say that the same things, I don't know, scare me nowadays. I have memories of being scared, I guess.
Yeah. Do you, with the house thing, with being scared in the house at night, do you have the same fear when you're outside on the street? In the dark? I'm just curious because,
you know, it's weird because I would normally say no.
Yeah.
But there were specific places that I would still have just that feeling of fear when I was outside.
Yeah. So
like we lived next door to my grandma. Uh-huh. And so, you know, my mom would send me over there pretty regularly for, you know, like if we needed like, you know, milk or something like that, you know, when we were out, because we lived like way the hell out of town, so you couldn't just like run in, you know, for 5 minutes and grab something. And you know, and so, you know, every time it was dark out, like it was just this paralyzing fear, even though the houses were right next door.
Yeah.
Like it's maybe a 15 or a 20 second walk, it felt like an eternity, and I would just mad dash across the yards over her house, and just the, I don't know what it was, just like about that place specifically. And my grandmother's house was where those, you know, where all the paintings and, you know, the creepy like tribal masks that she had hanging up were that always terrified me when I was a kid. Yeah, it's just it. So I don't know what it was.
My grandma's house used to freak me out too, because it's all one level. It was like bungalow style, but it was in the middle of nowhere. I'm talking 50 minutes to 120 minutes, hour and a half, whatever. To get to her house. It was in the middle of boonies and she had lots and lots of land. And I think I've told a couple of stories about how we were wandering around. My cousins and I would wander around in her backyard. And did I tell you we found a finger back there once?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So like this, like redneck central out in the middle of nowhere out here. But her house was made almost entirely of glass. So windows everywhere and she had no curtains.
Because
she's out in the middle of nowhere. Who needs curtains? So you would just kind of, her living room, you would wander and stare out into the dark, you know, like the wilderness. And it drove me crazy. It used to scare me senseless. And I remember being absolutely terrified of looking out and wondering, like, if something was looking in at me. And then there was an instance where a bear came apparently and like took a bite out of her bird feeder that was on her porch. And I slept through the entire thing. I was literally sleeping on the living room floor where the bear, like the window was like right next to me apparently. And I just slept through
it.
I woke up the next morning and everybody was like, yeah, the bear, like it woke me up. And you know, like it took a chunk out of this thing and there's a bear paw print on the window. And I was like, nope, apparently through the whole thing. So I guess it's fine. But yeah, that used to terrify me as a kid. I just was curious because I don't usually get terrified when I'm outside. But the moment I'm inside the house and either looking out a window or, you know, it's dark in my own home, I get really scared. So I'm also, strangely enough, because you mentioned the bomb shelter, I'm also terrified, irrationally terrified of air raid sirens and being bombed. Like that's just something that really bothers me. Like I expect that one day that's going to happen to us, I guess. I don't know. It's super irrational and crazy, but that's a fear that I have. I'm afraid of a lot of things, I'm realizing. A lot of really weird, stupid things, but Well, you know what I mean. Like, here I'm like, man, shit in reality really terrifies me. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we haven't even talked about anthropomorphic pigmen. You know, that's like probably the biggest fear that I have. But it's also not, I also recognize it's not a real thing. So it doesn't trouble me too much to talk about my fear. Whereas when I talk about, you know, being trapped in the dark or, you know, being bombed, I kind of get a little my heart rate rises a little bit. But I'd have to actually see or hear the pig sounds to be bothered by that. But yeah, what about you? Anything else weird?
I mean, I'd say, you know, we're sort of on the same page. You know, air raid sirens are scary. Mm-hmm. The emergency broadcast tone that plays, that always terrifies me. Again, it's just, it's not a whole lot of the stuff that's supposed to be scary, like ghosts and demons and, you know, whatever may or may not be out there. That's more intriguing to me.
Yeah, same.
Than scary. The scary stuff is the stuff that's tangible and that's like right in front of me. And very few times have I sort of been paralyzed by fear when I couldn't see what was scaring me. And that was, you know, living in that house and being next door to my grandmother's house. And just that area, it was just this like weight of fear that I could just never get rid of, and I was never able to figure out why. I don't know.
So scary to me. God, happy Halloween.
And long hallways. And again, you know, we talked about like big buildings.
Yep. Big buildings. Big buildings don't get me unless there's sound. Like if there's weird echoing or dripping sounds and I can't quite place where the sound is coming from, then I get a little bit scared. Caves surprisingly don't bother me that much, but abandoned buildings do.
Mm-hmm.
So if they've got the same kind of like feeling, that'll bother me a bit. I guess it depends on the abandoned building, now that I think about it. It's got to be like creepy asylum style for it to really bother me, which is probably why Outlast bothered me so much. The first game, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was good. Anyway, thanks for coming on and talking about really deep stuff and then also just shit that scares us. So that was...
Of course.
That was not what I was expecting.
And if anybody has any, you know, if you've listened to this and... you're sitting there going, man, I have the perfect game for PB or the perfect game for Cap. Please drop us a line.
Drop us a line.
Instagram, Twitter, email.
Twitter is great. You can find us at Deep Dive Cast on Twitter. If you're not on the Twitterverse, which is totally understandable, you can shoot us a love note at hello@deepdivecast. Both Cap and I have access to that. If you want to tell us about a scary game or tell us a scary story, tell us something that used to terrify you when you were younger, and we may, if you're okay with it, we may mention it on next week's episode. So
yes,
thank you guys.
Amazing.
That would be super cool. We'd love to share some scary stories and scary experiences, so feel free to do that for us. And thank you so much for joining us today. All right, I think that's it.
The Deep Dive Podcast is brought to you by PBTV. You can find us on the web at deepdivecast.com, as well as on Twitter and Instagram at deepdivecast. If you like what you heard, please consider rating and reviewing us on iTunes. And if you'd like, you can support us additionally by visiting us on Patreon at Pumpkinberry. Patrons receive monthly black and white wallpapers, bonus episode content, and the knowledge that you directly are keeping the Deep Dive afloat. We're also happy to announce that we are now available on Spotify, so if you prefer to listen there, please be sure to visit us at deepdivecast.com/Spotify. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time, divers.
The Deep Dive Podcast is proudly part of the Geek Generation Network. For more podcasts about your favorite geeky things like games or your favorite shows, browse our whole library at thegeekgeneration.com.